SS. Good afternoon. It's Wednesday afternoon here at KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. I'm Andy Klein with you for a Juneau afternoon. Appreciate you tuning in. We got rain for the rest of today. Rain tonight is likely, and showers likely for tomorrow. Some cloudy, scattered rain showers for Thursday night, and mostly cloudy skies for Friday. So maybe we've got a little bit of a clearing coming up. We got a great show today. Going to get a preview of Friday's concert in the Juneau Symphony concert series, featuring Sally Schlichting, Mary Watson, Lisa Abias, and Sue Kazama all coming by to talk to us. We got a couple of divas headed into the studio. Not me, no. This is Francis Leach and Taylor Vidic. Bob Armstrong will be here, Alaska Boat and Kayak. Also, we'll be talking about the Rotary Brewfest. It's all coming up on a Juneau afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia.
And we're in the studio with members from the Friday concert coming up for the Juneau Symphony Concert Series. Sally Schlichting and Lisa Abias are with me in the studio. How are you guys doing? Thanks for coming in.
Great. Thanks for having
really
us.
Really appreciate it. Tell me a little bit about this piece we're listening to right here.
Oh, the Nino Rota Trio. Nino Rota was actually a film composer for Federico Fellini. Did a lot of his films.
Oh,
did some
weird
music for...
Cool.
Yeah.
Film startling. Noir. Yeah. Right.
And Franco Zeffirelli. And, but this trio is one of his, I think, one of his better chamber works. And it's a lot of fun to play.
You guys going to be playing it on Friday?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about what you're going to be doing on Friday.
Well, the Rota is actually our final piece.
You gave it away.
I know.
Oh. But, the ending, the dramatic ending.
Oh, well, you still have to come to hear the whole piece, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, we only heard just a little bit there. So tell me a little bit more about the other. Is there a theme kind of to what you guys are doing on Friday?
Not really, other than that we're really old friends and we want to all play together. We're excited about that. But we have five things on the concert where Sally and her aunt Mary Watson will be playing two pieces. Myself and Sue Kazama will be playing two pieces, and then we will finish it off with our Rota piece.
The super group.
The trio.
Together.
Yeah.
As a trio.
It'll be three of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of split up into two people, and then a trio playing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we're opening the program with a Handel sonata for violin and piano. Lisa's going to do that, and I'm going to... then pick it up with a duo for flute and piano by Aaron Copeland, which is a real wonderful piece.
And what instruments, I should just go, instruments
flute.
Do you play?
I play flute.
And I play violin.
And the other instruments are piano and?
Just piano.
Just piano.
Sue Kazama and Mary Watson.
Two different piano players.
Piano.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll be doing a couple of Argentinian tango pieces by Astor Piazzolla. Those will be great.
Oh,
with,
really fun.
With Mary, that'll be fun.
Where's it happening?
Northern Light Church.
Okay.
Yeah. And Lisa's also going to do the Elgar Sonata, which is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what's,
I have
now,
a
what's that?
It's a violin sonata written by Ed Elgar, who, you know, wrote Pop and Circumstance.
Sure.
That's
okay.
What he's best known for.
nodding.
He might be pretty well known for that cello concerto that Jacqueline Dupré made famous.
Right, for sure. Yeah, he's got, you know, some great chamber music out there and some wonderful things written for strings. And this is one I picked, and it's not widely played, but I thought it was kind of written in the romantic period because it's wildly romantic and tumultuous, but it was actually written after 1900, so it's.
And we were saying 1917, actually, right?
Yeah,
and 1917. That's maybe World War I, and maybe that's why it is so.
That's
Europe,
what the program notes say.
Right.
It was written, you know, during World War I, and he was really upset about it, and mm-hmm. that's where he got most of his you know, reasons for writing it, I think.
Now, you say you guys have been playing your whole lives together, kind of, or for many, many years together, or tell me.
Actually, not playing together as much as we should have.
And you were fierce rivals to begin with.
Never rivals.
Oh, okay, I wanted to, come on.
No,
the work with
day,
me here.
One day I was practicing, I took a break. I was probably 15 years old, walked out on my back porch, and I heard a violin playing, and I was, like, shocked that there was another classical musician in the neighborhood. Turned out to be Lisa was my neighbor. And so we became friends in high school and played a lot in high school together.
Oh, great.
But we have not, after all these years, have not done a program together, finally doing it.
Well, that's great. Yeah. And then your aunt, of course, you've played.
I play with Mary all the time. Yeah.
Since you were 10 years old, even, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many years playing with her. That's really a wonderful relationship, I'm sure,
to have,
right? I mean, it must be a really special way of.
Our ensemble is pretty tight after all these years. But you've been playing with Sue for a really long time.
Yeah, I've been playing with Sue since I was 14, 15. And she was my coach, and she's been, you know, one of my mentors, you know, for most of my adult or high school and college life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back to Juneau, we started playing together, and where you can usually find us on the Symphony Showcase playing some Brahms or Beethoven or you know, something from the classical period, which is her favorite. we've been playing together for a long time as well.
Yeah, that's exciting to kind of share that. I mean, I'm sure it's exciting to play with new people as well.
Oh, sure.
So how does that compare, playing with people that you know, like the back of your hand almost, maybe what they're going to do, and versus playing with someone entirely new, still skilled but entirely new?
I don't know. I kind of prefer it. I like that when I play with Sue that she knows what I'm going to do sometimes before I even do it.
It's like your extra toughs.
Yeah,
you know, you slip
exactly.
them on. You know what to expect.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the most exciting.
I'll
but, you
be
know.
Sure to tell Mary that she's yes. like my extra toughs.
Sure. Yeah, that's pretty awful. I take that back.
No, it's good. It's all good. It's really good. No, it's really true. The familiarity that we have together is just wonderful. And every time we come back together to play after a period of time, it's just like, you know.
Is performing in front of an audience, is that an integral part, do you think, to being a musician? Do you feel like that's something that you really have to do to feel like you're growing as a musician? Or how does that fit into how you play music and why you play music?
Well, I love performing. If anybody comes to the symphony, they know that I love performing. but I think it's pretty important as to, you know, growth and having reasons to play and to practice is to have a goal and, you know, have a performance.
Gives you a deadline and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
I couldn't agree more.
Do you feel like having a performance like this is something where you maybe try in an area that you wouldn't normally, or does it make you reach out to types of music or that kind of, I mean, is there that element to it as well?
I definitely use it as an opportunity to push myself and pick some pieces that are pretty challenging at times.
I did as well. The Elgar was a push for me, and it's been a 6-month process really to learn that.
Well, give us the details one more time on where it is and all that and how people can see this.
Yeah, so the concert is this Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Northern Light United Church. You can get tickets online at junosymphony.org or over at the Jack, and I think maybe at Hearth, I'm not sure about that, and probably at the door. And it's, again, Mary Watson, Sue Kazama, Sally Schlichting, and Lisa Evius.
And Sally and Lisa, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thank you.
That's
you.
Great. And that's going to be happening at Northern Light Church on Friday night. Go check it out. Thank you. I'm joined now by divas. Oh, these divas are in here. You too. Frances Leach and Taylor Biddick are with me in the studio. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. I appreciate it. And
thanks.
You are going to be part of this Who's Your Diva performance.
Heck yeah.
And competition.
That's right.
I can barely keep these two separated in here. It's terrible. I mean, it's just, they're after it. It's just wait for the competition, you two. Absolutely. Okay. So, you guys, we've got some questions. We've got divas coming through all week, and we've got these questions that we want to ask divas as they come through, and people can start formulating their ideas about who is the who's their diva. Right? Is that, and have you guys?
I'm their diva.
Have you guys?
Well, I mean, they haven't seen me yet. So
now, have either one of you done this before? Did you do it last year?
Well, this is Frances, and I produced it last year.
Oh, okay,
and
all
so
right.
I was really involved in it, but I was not a diva. I get to be a diva this year,
but
though.
Clearly wanting.
That's right.
Yeah, like,
that's right. I had diva envy.
All these divas having fun up there, and you having to be in the background producing.
That's right.
It's not the role of a diva.
No,
to be in the background. That's crazy talk. Okay, so here's one for you. I'll ask you first, Taylor. Taylor, how did you pick out the music you're going to be singing?
I had it down to a few songs back in May, and I really kind of just had to point my finger at one and decide because I didn't know what to do. So I decided on Listen from Dreamgirls. It's sung by Beyonce in the movie.
Nice.
I took it down a couple steps because I'm no Beyonce, but I'm going to do my best with it. And then
I was going to say, that's gutsy.
Yeah.
Covering Beyonce.
So I'm like a wannabe Beyonce. You know?
Okay.
And then I'm also doing I Will Survive, sung by Gloria Gaynor, the disco song.
Yes, that's a great song. I love it. Yeah. And which ones are you, Frances, which ones are you performing, and why? How'd you come across them, and how'd you pick them?
Well, picking music was, I think, the hardest part about this competition.
Definitely.
I mean, since I produced it last year, I've been thinking, like, if I do this next year, what am I going to sing?
Well, it must be driving you crazy, right?
It drove me crazy. I mean, I would hear things, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that'd be a great one. And then, I know. And I think I drove Mike Moss, the music director, completely crazy because I was always bouncing him off him. But anyway, I chose two songs that completely don't represent me at all. But I thought they'd be good because I admire the performers who sing them. And so I'm singing Glitter in the Air by Pink. I saw her perform it at the Grammys. I wasn't at the Grammys. I just saw it.
I was going to say,
yeah, I had a first row seat.
That's
the
right,
Grammys.
Yeah.
You know, us divas. And then I'm singing a song that my five-year-old helped me pick out, and that was Madonna's Like a Prayer.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's a good. Those are good picks.
Thank you.
I like those. All these picks are good. They're all good and gutsy.
That's right.
Covering Madonna, covering Beyonce. I mean, that's all. You're really taking it on.
Go big or go
home.
Yeah,
go big. Go big. Okay, I'm going to ask the next question here on this list of diva questions we have. So describe to me, Taylor, the most exciting performance or event at which you've kind of performed. What's a standout performance you've had?
Well, shoot. I just graduated high school, so
okay.
I haven't had a bunch of professional experience. I do a lot of national anthem singing.
Do you?
I'm trying to break out of that, though.
Where have you done national anthem singing?
I've sung at a lot of the football games and the Pillars events.
Have you ever done the horrible thing of forgetting?
I did once. It's because I was listening to a Beyonce song repeatedly before I sang it, so I was like singing that in my head as I was singing the song. But I covered really well.
You snapped into Single Ladies in the middle of the national anthem?
Not quite that bad. I just repeated a part, but. My most memorable performance was probably last summer. I was at a volleyball tournament in Arizona, and I sang the national anthem for 10,000 people at the Diamondback Stadium.
Well, there you go.
So,
yeah, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, it was
wow.
Awesome. It was fun.
10,000 people. Wow, that's exciting. Okay, Frances, now what's your most
and
exciting?
And I have to go after that? Okay.
Well, I know.
I was like, geez, I'm only singing in front of 1,000.
Hey,
that's
this is divas, you know. You got
to
turn back and fight. Here we go.
Favorite performances. I mean, lately I've only been doing things that I really wanted to do. And I mean, I've done a lot of musical theater and lots of things. But I think some of the things I've enjoyed most is playing with Mike Moss in town. We've done some concerts. I've been able to sing with him on a few of his concerts with Dale and Simon, who are in the Diva Band. And I've had so much fun working with them. It's great.
You just feel like you kind of connect with them
or
there's just some sort of a good,
I do. I love singing with a band more than anything. And when I have that opportunity to sing with a band, it's
I get to be someone that I'm not every day.
Yeah, so sure.
Like
hey,
that.
Yeah, right. Okay, very cool. Now, we kind of touched on one thing like this, but have you ever had a performance that's gone bad? I'll ask you this first, Frances. We'll go to you next, Taylor. But have you ever had a performance go bad, and what happened?
Oh, my goodness, of course.
This is a tough one. I don't like this question. This is a tough question to ask a diva.
No, it's easy for me. I'll just come right out and say it.
All right.
You know, when I go on stage, I have this – I'm very infamous for forgetting lines, lyrics – singing them in the wrong order. And I also am not the most graceful on stage, so I've taken some good diggers on the stage during performances in front of a lot of people. We're hoping that's not going to happen in these 4-inch heels that I'm wearing this time. But, I think the worst, though, is I was in Oklahoma as 808 Annie in Ketchikan, and I was singing her big song, mm-hmm. I Can't Say No. And I sang the third verse first, the first verse second, and then I had to remember what I needed to sing last, and then I did make it to the second, and I'm not sure how it really went as
that's
far as order, but I got all the verses.
That's just improvisation.
That's right.
Yeah. Taylor, do you have a good story about a performance that went bad?
I can't think of, like, a solo performance that's, like, I haven't, like, fallen or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
The worst that's probably happened is my high school choir, our director was just like, this is terrible, and he just stopped us in the middle of a song, and we restarted.
I was at that performance.
Oh.
I was. I remember that performance.
No.
My daughter was in that choir at that time.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was the right call, though, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it was the right call.
Definitely. We were going
because
downhill
they recovered.
Fast.
You guys sounded great then after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, it just sort of one of those things where it started off a little bit wrong, and there was no way it was going to get better.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, okay, that's a good, that is memorable. I remember that one very much. Okay. And then how about this? What have you learned? You talked about this just a little bit ago, Frances, so I'll turn this one to you, Taylor. What have you learned from the accompanists that you've worked with, the different people that you've worked with? Have you learned anything from the people that you've had a chance to perform with?
Yes. I don't know if I could put a finger on it. It's kind of just the experience of singing with a band because it's the first time I've really gotten to do it. And, like, the first day that I got to practice with the band, I was just stoked. And now after every rehearsal, I'm just like, you guys rock. Like, this is so much fun.
Right. Cool. Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of showing me how I can carry music on for a long time and just keep it going. I don't know.
Cool. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. No, I mean, basically just repeat what Taylor said. Mike and Dale and Simon, they're so talented. And Mike has this knack for finding musicians. I know that he's brought in Sammy Burroughs, who plays amazing guitar.
Yeah,
he's brought in Sammy for a lot of songs, and I'm lucky to have him playing with me. And you know, aside from the band, you know, getting to sing with other divas too, because a lot of us needed backup singers, and so we recruited other divas. And Taylor and I get to sing with Diva Sandy on a really great song.
It's
gonna be
great.
And I have to admit, I'm almost having more fun singing that song than I am the two of mine. And I'm just like in back dancing and singing. So no,
pressure's off.
That's right. So no, it's been just being with the band and the talent that they bring to the table is absolutely amazing.
Great.
We couldn't do it without them.
If you had some advice to give a diva who might want to do this next year, what would it be?
Shoot, I don't really feel like I'm at a place to give advice.
Well, you've had a bit of the experience
so far. I mean,
so
a little
far,
bit, yeah,
so.
I guess. Definitely pick songs that are within reach but still fun. I changed my song partway through because I was like, this is not going to happen. So I.
What song did you have?
I was going to do an Alicia Keys song, and then I switched to a Beyonce song. So I don't know why I thought that'd be easier, but it made sense at the time. I'm going to really try to just have fun on Saturday night.
All right. How about you? Now, you've had experience with this now
as
a producer. So what advice would you give to wannabe divas? Maybe not wannabe. They're already divas.
That's right.
But they're ready to come out
and
show everyone. So
I don't know. I might demand that their M&Ms be separated by colors. You know, it's
nothing better than a good writer. You got to put
it in
the
writer.
That's
right. Have your writer ready to go and demands just to the ceiling.
You guys having fun doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
It's been fun.
Is it a lot of work?
It is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I equate it to two separate shows. I mean, you've got to learn your music, but you also have to fundraise. And so it's two completely different things, and it takes the time of two shows.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but that whole idea about fundraising, even like getting votes, it's like you're running for a political campaign,
too,
or something.
Yeah, and you know, we've been doing that since May,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been not only learning our songs since May, we've been going out selling advertisements, begging our friends and family, And it takes a lot.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit about the background. Where does the money go and that kind of stuff? Is this for it goes to a nonprofit?
Definitely. It goes to Juno Lyric Opera, and I'll put on my old producer hat here. And when we started this, I was the executive director of Juno Lyric Opera, and I stole the idea from First City Players in Ketchikan, and I called up Elizabeth Nelson, and I said, hey, can we steal this from you? Because I knew they were making a lot of money off it. And she said, of course, I stole it from someone else. So all Juno things, we kicked it up a few notches, got some major sponsors for the event, and it's been a huge success. Last year it sold out 2 weeks prior to the show, and that was at the Jack. This year it's at Centennial Hall, and we're almost sold out now. And Juno Lyric Opera is a fantastic organization in Juno. It's one of the few that you don't always have to audition to be involved in their things, and they take singers of all ages, as well as all skill level, mm-hmm. and that's fantastic.
What do you think about your competition, Taylor, out there? Are you seeing some real talent happening during the rehearsals?
Definitely. I feel like I'm surrounded by a bunch of professionals, and I'm just trying to work my way in somewhere. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be around.
Well, cool. Well, here's two of the divas that could be your divas. That's Frances and Taylor, and we thank you guys so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks,
really
Andy.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
All right.
Okay.
That's Who's Your Diva? It's happening Saturday night.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of September, 2012. It was on this day in 1940 the cave paintings were discovered in Lascaux, France, by four French teenagers and their dog. They were out exploring one day, and they found the main cave, about 66 feet wide, 16 feet high, with drawings on the walls in charcoal that has been found to be about 17,000 years old, about 2,000 drawings, mostly of horses, bison, red deer, stags, some cats, extinct cattle, some human figures, geometric shapes, and the outlines of human hands, possibly the signatures of the artists. And there also appears to be a star chart, clusters of stars that resemble Taurus and the Pleiades. It's the birthday of Irénée Joliot-Curie, born in Paris, 1897. She was the daughter of Pierre and Marie Curie, homeschooled as part of an educational experiment run by her parents and their friends called the Cooperative. The adults, scientists, experts taking turns teaching one another's children. During World War I, she helped her mother operate mobile X-ray units in field hospitals, her mother Marie, who discovered radium. She began assisting her mother in the radium laboratory at the University of Paris, met a young chemical engineer named Frédéric Joliot. In 1935, the two of them won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for artificially creating radioactive elements. And then, like her mother, Irénée Joliot-Curie developed leukemia as a result of her close work with radioactive substances and died at the age of 58. And it was on this date in 1846, Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning eloped. They'd been courting in secret for a year and a half through the mail, unbeknownst to her father. It all began when Robert Browning wrote Miss Barrett a fan letter saying, "I love your verses with all my heart, and I love you too." And she wrote back to him. She was an invalid. She was a heavy user of morphine. Her father did not approve of Browning. They were married on this date in 1846. She went back home afterward, stayed for 1 week, then ran off to Italy with Browning and never saw her father again. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, "The Swan." Across the wide waters something comes floating, a slim and delicate ship filled with white flowers, and it moves on its miraculous muscles as though time didn't exist, as though bringing such gifts to the dry shore was a happiness almost beyond bearing. And now it turns its dark eyes, it rearranges the clouds of its wings, it trails an elaborate webbed foot the color of charcoal. Soon it will be here. Oh, what shall I do when that poppy-colored beak rests in my hand? Said Mrs. Blake of the poet, I miss my husband's company. He is so often in paradise. Of course, the path to heaven doesn't lie down in flat miles. It's in the imagination with which you perceive this world and the gestures with which you honor it. Oh, what will I do? What will I say when those white wings touch the shore? The Swan, a poem by Mary Oliver from Winter Hours, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Oh, the Trogs doing Wild Thing, and it's Wildlife Wednesday right now, and Tina Brown and Bob Armstrong are with me in the studio right now to talk about Wildlife Wednesdays. The presentation's happening tonight out at the UAS Glacier View Room. It's happening at 7 o'clock. Tina, tell me about the Wildlife Wednesdays program.
We're a wild bunch, all right.
That's right.
Wildlife Wednesdays have been going on for a couple of years now. We're kicking off our season with the illustrious Bob Armstrong tonight. We provide folks with a variety of ways to explore and celebrate the wildlife in Alaska. That's the niche that we fill. The Alaska Wildlife Alliance is a group that is dedicated to the preservation and protection of Alaska's wildlife.
Very nice. Yeah. And Bob, tell me a little bit about this. This is a really fascinating discussion that you're having tonight about maybe something. I mean, I as much as I've kind of tried to learn about things that happen in the, as far as the wildlife management and things like that in Alaska. I had not heard of this before. This is the Dolly Varden Predator Control Program. Tell me about this.
Well, I inserted into the title a word that I really like, boondoggle, which is a waste of time and money. But also the program, I'm almost sure, did a lot more harm to salmon populations than it did any good.
And what was the idea behind this? This is actually where they kind of placed a bounty on Dolly Varden. Do I have that right?
Yeah, they placed a bounty up to 5 cents a tail, and the bounty program lasted from 1921 to 1940, and then in addition they had hired people to destroy Dolly Varden in various streams and. And the U.S. Bureau of Fisheries put up fish weirs and caught all Dolly Varden, leaving a number of lakes, and they destroyed them all. And then there was a commercial fishery down here, and then they were seining them to feed to fur bears and stuff. But there's estimated about well over 6 million were destroyed during that time.
And like you say, I mean, what's the method of getting Dolly Varden that's going to not make you get salmon and not, how could that possibly work?
Well, they thought that Dolly Varden was a serious predator on salmon young. And of course, they thought if they could get rid of them, it would increase the salmon populations. But there were probably 7 really good studies in Alaska on the predation of Dolly Varden on salmon young, and not a one of them came up with any information that indicated that they were a serious predator.
So was it done, I don't want to say quite on a whim, but how? What was the factual basis whereby they could start this program?
Actually, it probably originated with another species of fish, Arctic char, which occurs in the Wood River lakes up in Bristol Bay. And they're, unlike Dolly Varden, they do not go to sea. And they spend their entire life in freshwater.
And they do predate on young salmon?
Yes.
Okay. So the idea was, well, if char do it, Dolly Varden must do it too?
I think back then they probably couldn't tell a difference and didn't understand the differences in life histories and so on. But in some sense, probably both Arctic char and Dolly Varden benefit salmon in several different ways. One, in lakes, they feed heavily on a freshwater snail, and it's an intermediate host of a parasite that blinds the eyes of sockeye and coho salmon. So although there's not good studies about that, there's certainly studies that indicate it. In some systems, there's a pretty high incidence of that.
And, I mean, this is as we, of course, as our understanding of the natural world has evolved, as science has gotten better about that, we're starting to understand there's these millions of year old species have figured it out.
there's always connections out there.
Yeah,
when you break one, you're going to do something else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Tina.
I should probably mention for the few folks who may not know is that Bob was a biologist and research supervisor with Alaska Department of Fish and Game for 23 years. He also was an associate professor at UAF and UAS, where he taught courses in fisheries and ornithology. He has an MS in fisheries from University of Washington and an honorary doctorate of science from UAS. So he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I was remiss in not introduced. I've been so familiar, Bob, with your work and such a fan of your bird books and all of your great photography books and own many of them. So you're right. I should have introduced you a little bit more. I'm sorry, Bob, for folks.
Well, I do the same thing, but someone asked me who he was when they saw a flyer, and so I learned my lesson.
Someone said, "Who's Bob?"
I couldn't believe
who
it.
Who in the world? Well, it's fantastic, and to hear you speak, Bob, I've had the opportunity to hear you speak a number of times. Are you also have some photography that goes along with this, or how are you going to do that?
Well, it was I think the whole program was a great cover-up. So trying to find photographs from that period I found nearly impossible. Hmm. And I've gone through all the archives and lots of photos of other things, but not the predator control program.
There is one photo here on this flyer that's fascinating, just showing, as it says here on this caption, a one-day destruction of about 500 Dolly Varden that were caught with a single hook and line by one person.
Right.
Just amazing, and just the kind of wanton waste is awful to sort of to see, really. And as you say, I guess would now tell me a little bit about the kind of philosophy of wildlife management in this period and what they were going for and that sort of thing.
Well, not having lived back then, I'm not quite sure. it generally was a lot of interest in predators. In fact, if they ate something that people liked to catch or was commercially important or something, the reasoning was, let's get rid of them and we'll improve them.
I mean, this is the thought process behind shrimpers and killing sea turtles back in, you know, a long time ago. And, you know, these kinds of things that when those things happen now, it's considered, you know, poaching and illegal and that sort of thing, but probably was fairly common practice 100 years ago.
Yeah. What was fascinating about the program is they couldn't figure out after 20 years why the number of tails being turned in for bounty were about the same. They hadn't decreased at all. And the head of the Alaska Game Commission tried to get tails to examine them, and they refused to give them to him. And they also burned them immediately after they were turned in for bounty. So he brought a fella in to the villages who was good at poker. And he got he won the tails, and everyone else won the money, but he took the tails back to the lab, and none of them were of Dolly Varden. They were rainbow. One ring of tails was all sockeye salmon, the very species they were attempting to save. And then from there, that sort of exposed the program. And
that's where you get into that's real the multi-layers of the boondoggle. I mean, how much of a boondoggle this was. Yeah. Well, fascinating presentation. It's going to be happening tonight at UAS Glacier View Room. It's part of Wildlife Wednesdays. It's tonight going to be Bob Armstrong, who we've been talking to. And Tina, what's happening in the next couple of Wednesdays here as part of Wildlife Wednesdays?
We have all sorts of great things planned. We are generally once a month, and so you need to look for flyers, or you can contact me at 523-5402 or through www.akwildlife.org. But next month, Kate Savage from NOAA will be talking about the mysterious Marine Mammal Protection Program. We have Michelle Ridgway coming up in November. We have Doug Jones coming up to share Denali photography in December. Wayne Reglin is going to talk about his new book on wildlife management in January. And in February, Carrie Howard is going to be sharing her wildlife photography. So good lineup.
Great
and there
stuff.
Could be more things, too.
Terrific. So Wildlife Wednesdays tonight. It's Bob Armstrong. It's happening out at the UAS Glacier View Room. Bob, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. And Tina, thanks so much for doing this program or bringing Bob in. We appreciate it. Here's some Talking Heads. This is Wild, Wild Life, of course. Right now, we got Becky Janes in here. Becky, thanks so much for coming in from Alaska Boat and Kayak. You got a pretty cool thing coming up.
Yeah, thanks,
What's
Andy.
Going on?
We have, so every year we do an annual kayak sale. It's a used kayak sale. We have a couple new boats too, but generally what happens is that we run the kayak rental shop in Ock Bay Harbor and we use our boats over the course. We use them for 2 to 3 years and then we sell them. And we just sell them to keep our fleet new. And also, I know there's a lot of locals who want to buy used boats and it's a great opportunity to choose from lots of different models.
You get doubles and singles. And
yeah, and each year kind of like last year we sold a lot of singles. This year we'll be doing the bulk of it will be double kayak.
Okay.
So we'll have, I think we have about 7 to 8, maybe 6 to 7 doubles we'll be selling.
Are these plastic or glass?
They're
or?
All plastic boats is what we rent.
Like Neckies or something
Neckies,
like that?
Neckies, we have Wilderness Systems, the North Stars, which are good touring boats, all plastic boats. And then we have some current design boats, a couple singles.
Well, I got a double Neckie, and that thing is a tank.
It's a tank.
It just goes right along. Try to flip that thing.
Yeah. And they can flip, for sure. But
Actually, I have.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
They are like kind of like Cadillacs. They know, you know, they are really great for Southeast Alaska. I mean, that's what I sell. And people love to buy new kayaks, plastic boats, and used ones. I have a hard time selling fiberglass boats for that reason. So you can drag them on the beaches.
Yeah.
You can have family and friends use them. So they're just awesome to have in your fleet of your own personal, you know, use. So
tell me the details about how people can...
Yep. So the kayak sale is going to be coming this Saturday. And it's September 15th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. PM in the kayak shop in Auk Bay, and we'll be selling not only the used doubles and singles, we'll have a couple new boats on hand, and then we also have used paddle gear, which a lot of people like to purchase. So use kayak paddles, spray skirts, bilge pumps, paddle floats, which are safety gear.
The whole kit
life
and caboodle.
Jackets, nice used Kokatat life jackets. So yeah, we have lots of good stuff. And we also are going to be selling some of our used backpacks. And we use our backpacks on our glacier trips that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so those packs are, I believe, they are maybe some marmot packs and maybe Mountain Hardware. I just can't recall the brands.
But yeah, and if people don't know where the shop is in the valley, tell us exactly how to find it.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, literally you go out to Auk Bay Harbor. That's how I always give directions. Auk Bay Harbor, right next to the Hot Bite.
Okay,
you come down the hill next to D Hearts, and we're right there on the left. We're only kayak rental shop in Juneau, so we're right there on the side. And look for all the boats. We'll be in the parking lot laid out so people can take a look at them and see if it's something they're interested in. But the sale, again, is just this Saturday. It's going to be from 10 to 2 within those hours. I'll have some snacks and hot chocolate and a nice banner down there with brochures. And people can also join our, if they're interested in buying a boat, they also should look into taking a kayak class with us.
Oh, very cool.
And those are offered by our instructor, Brock Tabor, who does them once a month.
I've taken instruction from Brock before, and it was right before I flipped, and it saved my life, basically, almost. It really saved us. It was so great. I can't recommend that class enough from Brock Tabor. So
it's awesome. Yeah, it's really awesome. And we'll start those again next year. So we're wrapped
great.
Up for but we always can do private lessons with him. But that will be something that people can look into. And our website is junokayak.com. So starting tomorrow, I'll actually have a list of what boats we're going to be selling, and people can go online to take a look at that. So junokayak.com, or they can call our main office number 2, which is listed on there. So
terrific. Becky James from Alaska Boat and Kayak.
And above and beyond Alaska. Okay, yep.
Yeah, and you guys are going to be down there Saturday out at the Auk Harbor. Go check it out. It's the used kayak and boat sale down there, plus all the gear and all the other stuff. And I'll find out about the business as well. Thanks, Becky.
Thanks,
Appreciate
Andy.
It. Okay. We got Brewfest people here in the studio with me right now. Rachel Utzler with Brewfest. Rachel, thanks
Hello.
So much.
Hello. Hi.
And,
Thank you.
Andy Mills is in here as well, and Ann Metcalf from Rotary.
Right.
Thanks, you guys,
Thank
for coming
you. Thanks
in.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
And Andy, what's your I know what Ann does with Rotary. I know what Rachel does with Brewfest stuff. What do you do?
a Rotarian?
You're a Rotarian. Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, that's good. Then you belong. That's fine. You're fine in here then. Tell us about this. This is going to be a really fun event. Ann, tell us about the Rotary Brewfest and how Rotary got involved with it and kind of what the idea behind it
well,
is.
Well, I probably should let Andy do it, but I will. Because
okay.
I'll give the introduction. Andy and his fiancée, Corey, were in a club in Sacramento that put on a huge brew fest every year. So when they came back to Juneau and joined our club, he has been on a mission to do this Brewfest ever since. So, and then we heard that saga with Rachel, Rachel's help. But we're talking about doing the same thing, so we decided to join forces and put on the first ever Capital Brewfest.
Sounds amazing.
Yes, it's not going to be two little beer fests. Now we have one big beer festival.
That's pretty exciting stuff to amp it up to a gigantic beer festival.
Exactly. Inside and outdoor this year, too.
So tell me, where is it going to be held?
This is going to be at the Jack, and it's going to be next Saturday from 1 to 5. And we're going to actually have the back open also with tented areas. It's all going to be tented. And yeah. That's where we'll have the food vendors also.
I think we're going to need those tents.
Oh, yes.
No, it's going to be sunny and warm.
Yes, that's right.
If you have the tents up, it will be.
What does Noah know? They don't know anything.
It said mostly cloudy.
Okay, that's right. I know. I did read that.
That means not rain.
That's our version
cloudy
of sun.
Chance of rain
chance.
Is what I've got
only
now.
Chance.
What's the chance?
That
chance
is partial.
Means, chance means probably not.
We'll take it.
Yeah. So how did Rotary kind of, you know, get plugged in? I know that you heard this was going on, but tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, down
this
south,
mission that you've had. Here.
Right. Down south, yes. It was such a fun event because it brought people outside of Rotary into an event that was fun. And Juneau, my hometown, I needed to get something like that here. Give it a chance. And there are people here that obviously are as passionate and enthusiastic about it. So it's taken off. It's a whirlwind of 3 months where you normally want a year to prepare.
Yeah,
and
yeah, right.
It's come together beautifully.
And Rachel, tell me about what are some of the varieties and things people might see at the Brewfest?
Oh, we actually have a printed program this year. This is not like just the little beer gardens they throw off in little autumn festivals and things like that. This actually has a printed out program that will have your flow and where you have your different booths of different breweries coming through, and then a lot of the help from specialty imports and the other distributors in town. Do you want me to run through a whole list?
No,
of
just maybe highlights. I mean,
exactly.
Weird,
I'm not
going to
cool
go
through
stuff.
The whole actual list. Yes. That's going to be on the insert in the program because it's so lengthy, it doesn't fit on the program,
okay.
Actually. So Specialty Imports has outdone themselves. We had to give them two booths, which each will have 18 different varieties of beers.
All right.
And then they are also bringing in Kenai Brewing, Midnight Sun Brewing, and then we get Broken Tooth Brewing, which is actually only served in Anchorage, so they don't get out that often.
And they're a local Anchorage brewery?
They are local. Their Broken Tooth is actually Moose's Tooth Brewery that has now broken off. And so they don't get out of Anchorage ever. So we're really excited to have them
here. But there's more than just Alaska Brews, right? Is it?
Oh,
right.
Well, no, we have, with the specialty imports.
Like, they have a lot of Belgian stuff, for instance, and stuff like that.
Oh, and they're going to.
That really good stuff.
The distributors will have the outdoor, out-of-state stuff. Yeah.
Yes, and then we have mostly all of our breweries that have their own booth are all pretty Alaskan breweries.
Like, you have to know Flemish to even know that it's
exactly.
beer.
Exactly.
And then
and some sours.
It's so mysterious.
And there's a lot of things that are, that are ciders this year. Lot more ciders coming in, different imports. And then even Broken Tooth has their hard apple ale, which I'm very curious about trying because, it's your cider and your ale.
Yeah.
So they're doing that. And then we also have Haynes coming in, and we have Denali Brewing that Odom is bringing those people in. And then K&L is bringing in some Sierra Nevada and some Elysian and some Shock Top. And and then of course Alaskan Brewing will be there.
Yes, very good. And so
with some fun stuff.
Don't forget,
there's a gluten-free beer on that list, which I thought was really cool.
There also is.
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Because
I've got some friends
who
are really
crazy
into that. The whole gluten. They've knocked off 80 pounds or something.
Exactly. And I think that ciders also go for gluten-free, don't they?
Yeah.
So they actually have something to drink. Varieties.
Very cool, yeah. What are you most excited about with this? What is the...
Besides the ciders.
Yes. Is that it? Are you most excited about the ciders?
I like across the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're a generalist.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Very good. Very good. And tell me a little bit about the fundraising aspect of this and where this money goes to and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for this year, we are splitting the proceeds. from the event between Saga and Rotary of Juneau. And we have a lot of stuff. I mean, our latest project that we're just finishing up is a greenhouse that we built out at Lemon Creek Prison. And we support
youth exchange. I saw some great photos online on the Facebook about that. That looked, people out there just really working hard.
We had a lot of fun.
Got some decent weather, though, for some of the construction I saw. Yeah, yeah.
Now
that's an exciting project.
So I think we're just down to wiring the fans. And,
Very cool.
We'll have an inauguration of that. But
how do you guys decide on what projects you're going to work on? How does Rotary go through that process?
That's a good question. Rotarians brainstorm and seek out needs in the community is the main way. And then try and address those needs.
Do people apply for, do people sort of like have needs and sort of approach Rotary ever?
No,
is it more?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But mostly it's from within the club.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on the local projects. And we also do international projects, you know, tap into a lot of the Rotary infrastructure there. And, you know, I was saying before, Youth Exchange is we have a, Rotary has probably the best youth exchange program in the world, least expensive for the kids, best experience for the kids. So we're very into that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's such a great program, giving kids a worldview and, you know, all that. Yeah, really exciting stuff. So
this year, actually, it's with Saga.
Yes, tell me that part of it.
Beverly is a good friend of mine, and we were just discussing, and she was trying to brainstorm funding opportunities because they had a lot of funding cut this year, and they were in desperate need. And she's like, hey, can you help me throw off a beer fest? And I was like, yes, why not? And we could throw off a smaller beer fest, but then when we had Rotary hook up with this, and it's just something that they would support anyway, it seemed like a really perfect fit.
Yeah, that is a great fit. Yeah, so half of the money goes to Saga, and that's great, and they do really terrific programs.
Yes, all kinds of programs.
She's
involved
AmeriCorps
in all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Right, that's right. They're part of the AmeriCorps thing as well, yeah.
And even the Coastal Code cleanup, which is also going to be happening that Saturday morning.
There's a lot happening Saturday.
It is. But if you go to the Coastal Code, clean up the beach first and then go have a beer because it's going to be from 1 to 5. So it's an afternoon sort of event.
And do remember, if you do the Coastal cleanup and bring your data sheet,
we'll give you
an extra token at the event.
Very good.
You know, you get an extra beer for cleaning up the beach.
Absolutely, you should. Just to warm up. You need those extra calories.
Yeah, so just don't keep your data card with you. Don't drop it off at the spot and bring it in if you're actually coming to the festival, and we'll give you an extra beer.
Very cool. Anne, did you have something you wanted to add there? Okay. So she covered it. Well, so this is fantastic. The Brew Fest, it's growing every year.
Well, now it's going to be an annual event.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to be passing this off onto Rotary. I'm just getting them started and just hooking them up with all the beer people. And they are going
to
be doing this
Rachel
yearly
Rotarian.
Now.
There you
go.
I'm my own kind of Rotarian.
So give me the details one more time on just the place, time, and all that stuff.
Yes, it will be Saturday, the Jack, at 1 to 5.
And tickets are $25.
Yes, and you can buy tickets at capbeerfest.com.
Brewfest. There we go. That's right.
So capbrewfest.com, and this is that's the thing there, and it's Saturday. It's happening.
Great little logo. Just look for the little blue beer cap with
and
the Alaska flag on it.
Music. We have two bands lined up, Fire on McGinnis and C. Scott Frye.
Oh,
and food
vendors,
so everything's covered.
It's good drinking music.
And
that's right.
Yeah, C.
That's
Scott
good
Frye,
stuff.
You know, the old mayor of Juneau.
Oh, yeah.
Might as well have him at the first ever Cap Beer Brew Fest.
That's right.
Cap the...
And I was going to say, we do have a designated driver ticket for $5. We noticed down south that some folks didn't want to drink beer but wanted to come and enjoy music, hang out with their friends, eat some food. And that is the one way that folks can come to the event and have fun.
Is there food available, too?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We have both Spinning Pig and Bernadette's.
It's a whole afternoon activity here.
It's a big outdoor.
And then you can go next door and listen to the Divas.
The Divas. And then right after that, go head over to Rock the Vote over at Rockwell.
Oh, exactly.
That's right. But that's more for younger people who aren't going to go to Beer Fest anyway.
That's drinking beer.
Yeah, that's C. Scott Frye's second gig that day.
Exactly.
We're just hoping he shows up. Yeah, that's going to be.
I'll get him there.
Yeah, all right. So it's the Capital Brew Fest. Go to capbrewfest.com to get your tickets. And sounds like it's going to be a blast this weekend. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
what's inside of you. She's some kind of demon that she didn't look to. If you don't watch out, it'll stick to you, to you. What kind of fool are you? Strange brew can what's inside of you.
That's a Juno afternoon for this afternoon here of Wednesday. And we appreciate you tuning in. Thanks to all my guests as well. Sally Schlichting and Lisa Abias, Francis Leach and Taylor Vidic, Bob Armstrong, Tina Brown, and of course the folks we just talked to, Andy Mills, Rachel Utzler, and Ann Metcalf, putting on Rotary Brewfest. It's going to be a busy weekend this weekend. Lots going on. A lot of fun stuff happening. Divas and brew and voting and all that kind of stuff happening at Rock the Vote as well over at Rockwell. I want to throw in a pitch for that. That's an all ages, no alcohol event. We'll be talking more about that this week as well. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for joining me here on a Juno afternoon. We're going to head to headlines from NPR coming up next. From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.